Dr. Williams is a very, very energetic speaker. And he says, after such a long, energetic delivery, he says he's ready to go now with great expectations. So, yes, great expectations.
Asked to select a piece to read, I chose this from chapter 9 of Great Expectations because it includes one of the things that I find most effective, most moving about Great Expectations, and that's the conversations between Pip and Joe. Chapter 9 of Great Expectations deals with the interrogation which Pip gets from Uncle Pumblechook and Mrs. Joe about his experiences at Miss Havisham's, and that's in itself a wonderful piece of writing because it's a way in which Dickens lets Pip know that Pumblechook is a fraud, because Pumblechook says, oh yes, that's right, this is what happens there, yes, 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 and of course Pip is just simply making up stories. It's an interesting chapter from that point of view, the business of making up stories, of course, which is Dickens's way of making his life make sense. You'll remember the early part of the chapter where Pumblechook cross-examines him. Boy, what like is Miss Havisham? Mr. Pumblechook began again when he had recovered, folding his arms tight on his chest and applying the screw. Very tall and dark, I told him. Is she, Uncle? Asked my sister. Mr. Pumblechook winked assent, from which I at once inferred that he had never seen Miss Havisham, for she was nothing of the kind. Good, said Mr. Pumblechook conceitedly. This is the way to have him. We're beginning to hold our own, I think, Mum. I'm sure, Uncle, returned Mrs. Joe. I wish you had him always. You know so well how to deal with him. Now, boy, what was she a-doing of when you went in today? Asked Mr. Pumblechook. She was sitting, I answered, in a black velvet coach. Mr. Pumblechook and Mrs. Joe stared at one another as well they might, and both repeated, in a black velvet coach? Yes, said I. And Mrs. Stella, that's her niece, I think, handed her in cake and wine at the coach window on a gold plate. And we all had cake and wine on gold plates, and I got up behind the coach to eat mine because she told me to. Was anybody else there? Asked Mr. Pumblechook. Four dogs, said I. Large or small? Immense, said I. And they fought for veal cutlets out of a silver basket. Mr. Pumblechook and Mrs. Joe stared at one another again in utter amazement. I was perfectly frantic, a reckless witness under the torture, and would have told them anything. But he does go on and tell them all sorts of other things, and then when that interrogation is over, we get to the moment later when he confesses the truth to Joe. And again, I think it's a wonderfully touching moment, operating on so many different layers. Joe has this desperate hope that there is some truth in Pip's tale, after all, combined with his desire to make the little boy feel better about himself, his Pip's sense of self-disgust and shame, his being unable fully to articulate what he's feeling, Joe's sense of what is right, and he's struggling to find ways to help the boy, to put him right. I think it's a wonderfully touching exchange. After Mr. Pumblechook had driven off, and when my sister was washing up, I stole into the forge to Joe, and remained by him until he had done for the night. Then I said, before the fire goes out, Joe, I should like to tell you something. Should you, Pip? Said Joe, drawing his shoeing stool near the forge. Then tell us. What is it, Pip? Joe, said I, taking hold of his rolled-up shirt sleeve and twisting it between my finger and thumb. You remember all that about Miss Havisham?
Remember, said Joe. I believe you. Wonderful.
It's a terrible thing, Joe. It ain't true.
What are you telling of, Pip?
Cried Joe, falling back in the greatest amazement.
You don't mean to say it's...
Yes, I do. It's lies.
Joe. But not all of it. Why, sure, you don't mean to say, Pip, that there was no black velvet coach. For I stood shaking my head. But at least there was dogs, Pip. Come, Pip, said Joe persuasively. If there weren't no veal cutlets, at least there was dogs. No, Joe. A dog? Said Joe. A puppy? Come. No, Joe. There was nothing at all of the kind. As I fixed my eyes hopelessly on Joe, Joe contemplated me in dismay. Pip, old chap. This won't do, old fella. I say, where do you expect to go to? It's terrible, Joe, ain't it? Terrible, cried Joe. Awful! What possessed you? I don't know what possessed me, Joe, I replied, letting his shirt sleeve go and sitting down in the ashes at his feet, hanging my head, but I wish you hadn't taught me to call knaves at cards jacks, and I wish my boots weren't so thick nor my hands so coarse. And then I told Joe that I felt very miserable and that I hadn't been able to explain myself to Mrs. Joe and Pumblechook, who were so rude to me, and that there had been a beautiful young lady at Miss Havisham's who was dreadfully proud, and that she had said I was common, and that I knew I was common, and that I wished I was not common, and that the lies had come of it somehow, though I didn't know how. This was a case of metaphysics, at least as difficult for Joe to deal with as for me. But Joe took the case altogether out of the region of metaphysics, and by that means vanquished it. There's one thing you may be sure of, Pip, said Joe after some rumination, namely, that lies is lies. Howsoever they come, they didn't ought to come, and they come from the father of lies and work round to the same. Don't you tell no more of them, Pip. That ain't the way to get out of being common, old chap. And as to being common, I don't make it out at all clear. You are uncommon in some things. You're uncommon small. Likewise, you're an uncommon scholar. No, I'm ignorant and backward, Joe. Why, see what a letter you wrote last night. Wrote in print, even. I've seen letters, and from gentlefolks, that I'll swear weren't wrote in print, said Joe. I have learnt next to nothing, Joe. You think much of me. It's only that. Well, Pip, said Joe, be it so, or be it so, you must be a common scholar afore you can be an uncommon one, I should hope. The king upon his throne, with his crown upon his head, can't sit and write his acts of parliament in print without having begun when he were an unpromoted prince with the alphabet. Ah, added Joe with a shake of the head that was full of meaning. Ah, and begun at A, too, and worked his way to Z. And I know what that is to do. Though I can't say I've exactly done it. There was some hope in this piece of wisdom, and it rather encouraged me. Whether common ones as to callings and earnings, pursued Joe reflectively, mightn't be the better off continuing for to keep company with common ones instead of going out to play with uncommon ones, which reminds me to hope that there were a flag, perhaps. No, Joe. I'm sorry, there weren't a flag, Pip. Whether that might be or mightn't be is a thing as can't be looked into now without putting your sister on the rampage. And that's a thing not to be thought of as being done intentional. Look here, Pip, at what is said to you by a true friend, which this to you, the true friend, say. If you can't get to be uncommon through going straight, you'll never get to do it through going crooked. So don't tell no more on 'em, Pip, and live well and die happy. But you're not angry with me, Joe. No, old chap.
But bearing in mind that them which were, I mean to say, of a stunning and audacious sort, alluding to them which bordered on wheel cutlets and dog fighting, a sincere well-wisher would advise Pip they're being dropped into your meditations when you go upstairs to bed. That's all, old chap. And don't never do it no more.
Thank you very much for a wonderful lecture and also followed by a wonderful reading. And we are quite fascinated with them. And thank you very much. I hope that all of the audiences will thank him again by joining me by clapping big hands.